This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com, BlackStarLabs.com, and by StrengthCoach.com. Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 134. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and with me is the lovely, as always, Lee Peel of AvidityFitness.net, soon to be leafpeel.com in the future. This is a big deal. I won.
You did. You won. You're never going to have to say it again, like ever.
I don't have to have it written down in front of me for when I, you know, drop the outline and do the show.
I know. And I discussed this with other people, and they said, you know, why are you changing your name? And I was like, Kevin Larrabee. It's all for him.
You know,
That's how important you are in my life.
One episode at a time, I'm trying to change the world.
You're doing it, man.
Well, let's do a podcast. And, we weren't together last week. People were all over the place. Obviously, John is not here this week. He has to study still. I thought he was
studying for like we're gonna all be like going on with our lives, and we're gonna call up John one day, and he's gonna be like, "Hello,
who is it?" Like,
and like, do you realize that it's been 15 years? Fast,
yeah.
Oh, that damn anatomy! He's never gonna get out of it.
He's in a black hole, and he's just spinning. He's just spinning, and he, time is distorting around him, and everything is slowing down for him, and he doesn't realize it, but he will be in school the rest of his life.
I don't know how he does it. It's insane. It's just an insane amount of studying. I can't even imagine that there's enough to learn in that. Like, he's just every time at Facebook, break from studying.
Yeah.
it's insane. I'm so bad for the guy.
You know, it really makes me feel like I'm not doing enough with my life when John is still at school, but who knows? Maybe that will change. Let's talk about a couple things. First off, we are going to have a lot of guests coming up in the next couple shows. We have been having more of a request for guests, and you know what? I'm budgeting my time a little bit better these days. I got a little bit of extra time, so we're going to bring back the one-on-one interviews pretty much every week. This week, for this episode, after we do the mailbag, John Berardi is going to be on, and he's going to be talking about a ton of stuff. I even wrote down some of the stuff that we talk about, including a lot of the studies that he's doing on his website with the members of his website, including, you know, green supplements and urine pH. Do green supplements actually work? And also, the difference between high-intensity interval training versus just using steady state. So it's actually some pretty interesting stuff, and we do get to a couple of the questions from the listeners and how John was actually able to increase his waist size from 32 to 41 inches in one day. Beano, John. That's the one thing I would have thought of was Beano, but didn't happen. So John is this week. Next week we get another John, but that's Dan John. He's going to be coming on. And the week after that, we have Alan Aragon. So we're kind of doing like a nutrition training. And then we're going to be back with Mike Robertson, because I like to talk to Mike Robertson. You know what? I do.
And who doesn't like to talk to Mike?
You know what? I'm not even going to be mean. I do like to talk to Mike Robertson and his new In the Trenches podcast. It's like the NPR fitness podcast, except with like the music in the background and stuff. It's really good. So,
good.
And Lee, you were on that, right?
I was on it.
Yeah.
Tony was on it. John was on it. You were on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but how can we not like it?
Yeah. It's a good podcast, and Mike is really doing a good job with it, and I think more people should listen to it. So go to his website, robertsontrainingsystems.com. Subscribe. The next thing is, for some reason, I wrote down t-shirts in the outline, and I can't remember why I did that. I think it was either to say, you know what, we got a couple t-shirts left, but I'm actually in the process of placing another order for another 30 t-shirts. So especially the women out there who want small sizes and Tony Gentilcore, we will be getting more smalls in. I apologize that we're out, but we're going to do something about that. They're coming in soon, and if you do are interested in getting one of the t-shirts, just shoot me an email at kevin@thefitcast.com. I'll give you the details, or I'm sure you can find the details in the outline of the previous couple shows. Next, Destination Abs update. Lee, I think we should talk about this for a second. You know, we're kind of transitioning into I guess we would call it phase three or four, something like that.
Something like that. You know, basically, we're... My concern, and I don't know what you were going to post of what I wrote you, but my main concern is when you're trying to get the abs, there's two things that you have to look at. You have to be lean enough to see them, and you have to have enough mass, you know, for there to be the abs to be there. And I could get you leaner, you know, like a lot leaner, in order for us to see the base that you have. But I don't want to go into, you know, a machinist type zone to do so. So I wanted to go kind of one more round, you know, and I wanted to go one more round of adding a little bit more mass and seeing what we could, you know, still knocking off a little fat, more of a recomp round, and then move again into another cut phase. And I think in general that for a lot of guys who find themselves in the position that are quote unquote hard gainers or are having a hard time just, you know, melting the fat away into the abs, that it's pretty much the ideal direction to go, because you can really add some mass, you know, and then cut down, add a little mass, cut down, and it's a lot more encouraging, and, you know, you're going to end up with a better look at the end. You really are. So that's why we're going into, like, this whole next phase that we're doing.
Yes, and that will be... I'll be posting some more about that on Tuesday or Wednesday. I have the write-up done, but I figured there's no point in posting it on a Saturday or to post it, you know, on a Sunday when we're going to be posting a show. So you can check out some more of those details come Tuesday, and we will continue to talk about it as we go into the future down the road. Fun stuff. And actually, you know what, I was talking with Lee about this, but I think almost everyone's program out there should have like that 1 hour of, you know, walking or just some, you know, light steady state cardio on their off days, just because it got me to, you know, have a reason to show up to the gym an hour early before training my clients. And I worked on soft tissue work 7 days a week instead of, you know, the three or four that I was actually lifting. And I've gone, and people who've trained with me before, especially like Tony and Brian, the guys at CP, will know that pretty much before this, I had lots of trouble going, you know, below a 16-inch box for squatting. I've been squatting to a 13-inch box these last 2 weeks, and my numbers are skyrocketing.
That is awesome.
Just from the, you know, the improvement in hip mobility. So
it's so important, and with all my, you know, a lot of people kind of, not a lot, but some people question some of the things that I do with my programming, and with, you know, like walking and that much, you know, stretching and mobility, and I'm like, yeah. Because the average person, you really need it. And especially if you're, you know, to be making improvements like that and to be with your calories cut so low and to have the kind of, you know, strain of your daily jobs and the things that you do particularly, you're going to need that extra, you know, like little recovery time and the extra little mobility work in there. And I think it's awesome that you've improved. And I think that it's so key and so important to people. And you can call it, you know, oh, going too much into functional training all you want, or, you know, focusing too much on the rehab. But we're so messed up. All of us walking right now, I'm messed up. I'm so messed up. Like, my body is just wrecked because, you know, when I messed up my leg, everything felt it afterwards. And I've decreased in movement a lot because of it, just from compensation. And I am leagues, like, I'm literally, like, years behind. I feel like I lost years. And I'm, you know, I'm starting over from, like, step one. And I'm still better off than a lot of people who are just never had an injury, but are just sitting in an office or, you know, just immobile and stagnant all the time. And I just think it's really important. And I think it's important to improve your strength, your look. I think that it's important on so many levels, and it's so neglected. And I find it amazing that people have no problem doing 15 minutes of aggressive interval training. They can't just, you know, do that, you know, that little bit of extra work to, that's gentle, you know, and then it's not too overly straining to take care of themselves in that sense. So I know that we always, all of us always kind of say that, and people might feel like we're beating a dead horse, but it's because people aren't doing it still, you know? And so I keep feeling the need to have to put it out there.
Well, you know, this is kind of off topic, but somewhat on topic, but you know, I believe in it so much, and it's helped me so much that I went to the hardware store 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I think I ended up buying about 18 feet worth of PVC pipe. And it wasn't all for me. I'm not, you know, a crazy dude, or I'm not building pipe bombs or anything like that. The reason why I bought it is that the whole next week, as my clients came in, there was a whole row of PVC pipe at my gym. And I said, here, take this. When you're at home and you're, you know, in between commercials of Ugly Betty or whatever the hell you're watching, get on the ground and roll out, work on your tissue quality. Because as you know from our training, your mobility could use some improvement. You know, we could all use a little bit more depth on our squats. We could all use, you know, a little bit more of a, you know, some of us don't like our ass to be as sore the next day. Mainly if when you come in and you work on your IT band and you look at me like I'm stabbing you in the leg and I'm trying to do harm to you, that's when you need to go home and do the work outside of the gym. And that's what, you know what, it's cheap. Like the 18, I probably spent $40, but I bet I'm going to be able to get faster results for my clients just from going out and buying them all like a $4 piece of PVC pipe just to take home and in your spare time, roll around on it and hit some trigger points. We'll all have fun together.
It's so awesome that you know, you went to that length, and you know, any trainers that are listening and just heard that, and it's a big, take a hint, take a cue from that. That's a really big deal. It's a big gesture.
And if, yeah. And if you do have extra PVC pipe, you can take it into the backyard and make a mini golf course.
There you go. And that's what it's really all about. Yeah. You know, after the mobility is done.
It's mini golf. Yep.
You know, that's what it's all about.
I get a windmill made completely of, what's so funny? I have a windmill completely made of old men's health magazines. Recycled.
Oh my god, I'm just seeing this like ode to men's health mobility golf course in the back of like your yard.
Yeah, and on top I have a paper mache of Jessica Biel.
Is her mouth open and close to make the degree of difficulty harder?
No, it just stays open.
We could so go there. I won't go there.
Yep.
All right, yeah, that's just going to get worse if I keep thinking on it.
Yeah,
what's next?
Next is, I'm bringing back a segment which I never actually put together, but we tried to put it together, but I'm going to try one more time to actually make...
You're bringing back something that you never had out in the first place.
No, but you know, in my mind, I'm bringing it back.
Okay.
So, originally, we had this segment that we were going to do called The Ultimate Answer, which was going to take about 20 minutes or so to ask one question to, you know, 20 or 25 or 30 fitness professionals or people that, you know, are working in this field, and they would all have, you know, 2 minutes to answer it, and then I would just put them all together and give you the ultimate answer. Get where I'm going, Lee?
Okay, I get what you're saying. Like a really insane quick round table.
Yeah, but no one gets to talk to each other.
That's awesome.
And we do have pretty much everyone that you've heard on the show before is on this list, and I've also talked to a couple other people, and we're going to try to get I'm going to see if I can get a hold of Mark Verstegen, because obviously he's going to be able to answer some questions, especially in terms of athletics. And you know, it's always good to hear from Alan Cosgrove every week when he can drop some kind of knowledge bomb on you and just simplify things. And hopefully we're going to put it all together into one nice, neat 20-minute segment, probably, because not everyone's going to reply to the question of the week. But I hope to put this together and make it just a much higher quality show. I know a lot of people love the stuff we do with a mailbag, but I'm taking a cue from maybe 300. It might be Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, but I'm going to step it up. And, you know, you got to be excellent to each other. And this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be excellent to you guys.
Know that the quality of the show is improving when we start quoting Bill and Ted.
Yeah. What's wrong with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
I didn't say there was... I love Socrates.
Okay. Socrates. And Beethoven.
Yeah. Napoleon. The ice cream. Love it all.
Ziggy Piggy.
Ziggy Piggy!
Oh,
no,
God.
I'm going to go to a water park and play air guitar.
You want to go to Waterloo?
I do. I want to go to Waterloo, and I want to play air guitar.
And two heads are better than one.
I don't think so in this case.
That's our off-topic discussion for this week, part of the main show.
There you go.
Last but not least, our off-topic T-shirt winner from the previous episode. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, but it's Mark Seguin. You know, we were going to pick one randomly, but when we also, I think John actually asked for some off-topic topics to talk about, and Mark simply, this is his, the subject of the email was off-topic t-shirt, and the body of the email just said, talk about boobs. So, obviously... I'm a little kid, so I thought that was good. And
it's a winner.
Mark gets T-shirt.
Congratulations, Mark.
And we will talk about boobs next week, I promise you.
I think that it's only fair that if Mark won that shirt based on that submission, that he should have to send in a picture of the shirt being worn by some nice boobs.
Yeah, no.
To say thank you.
Yeah, and Mark, I will get you if you need a smaller size... like an extra small for whoever's going to put that on, especially if you have like a hot friend.
Yeah.
Do that up. And
they can tie it and wet it there, you know.
Oh, I went out to dinner, one more side thing. I went out to dinner with Tony Jellicoe last night.
Comment segued that, so I'm really curious where it's going.
So I went out to dinner with, Tony Jellicoe of the Boston Herald Step Up blog, formerly sponsored by Reebok. And we had lots of steak and chicken. And you know what? Most of the discussions that I have with Tony, not about training. It's about chicks, you know, being at a restaurant and him saying, you know what? Yeah, she's really hot. I just wanted to let you know that. I'm like, thanks, Tony. And I also have a picture of Tony that will be posted on theficast.com that is from his high school prom. And it is awesome.
Is it the one from his Facebook?
Yes, it is, Lee Peel.
Yes.
Thank you.
I love that picture. It's awesome. He's so smooth.
No, Tony Jellicoe is... he was quite the man even back in 1996 when he was in high school.
Oh, yeah.
So that will be... actually, you know what? I'm going to make that the picture for the podcast this week.
Is that the podcast cover?
That's the podcast cover on iTunes. So look at your iPod right now. That was Tony in 1996, circa 1996. That sounds better.
I just love the little swoop curl that just falls so delicately over his forehead.
I mean, I can just imagine him like driving the ladies crazy when he has to kind of brush it to the side.
Oh yeah, but he does like a little bit of a flick.
And it's just like, you know? Yes, I love my hair when I had hair back then. But Tony, I know where you're coming
you're
from, man.
You're Cornell. You're so Cornell.
So, everyone, take a look at this. I don't know why I had to do this. I think Tony must have made fun of me yesterday or something like that. I can't remember. But that's that. And we're going to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with the mailbag. And then we're going to talk to John Brody. So stick around. If you want to boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat, head over to turbulencetraining.com and also check out ttmembers.com, a monthly turbulence training website where you can get a new program every single month. First question that we have in the mailbag comes from KC5OHD. G from Twitter. What are the general guidelines for post-workout protein and carbs? Lee, tell them exactly how many grams of protein and exactly how many grams of carbohydrates. What kind of protein? What kind of carbohydrates? And exactly how long after his workout he should wait before ingesting them?
You're going to love my answer. It depends.
I do love that answer.
You thought, yeah? You know, generally when you're looking at a post-workout nutrition intake, you need to take into consideration some factors. And basically, the main set of those factors are what is your training and what is your current what is your training goals and what is your current, you know, body fat or body composition level. And when you look at those two things, it makes it a little bit easier. So, for example, let's say you're in a bulking phase. You know, you're lifting for, you know, gaining some muscle, gaining some strength. You're eating in a surplus of calories. It doesn't really matter, you know, because if you're eating in a surplus and if you're trying to pack it away, I'm not going to say to completely ignore it, but I'm just saying that on average, you're going to be getting an excess amount of calories and excess amount of protein and carbohydrates anyway. So more than not, that food on its own is going to do its job and do its job well. If you want to make sure in a situation like that and just, you know, cover all your bases, post-workout, just within, you know, 30 to 60 minutes, eat and eat well and, you know, eat protein, eat carbs, eat a meal, and you should be fine. If you are in a deficit, you know, if you're cutting, then how, you know, severe is that deficit? And what exactly are you doing? In my book, in the Fatless Troubleshoot, I actually cover this, and I give very specific guidelines. And I do go into the detail of, like, ratios and the ratios of things like that. But basically, it breaks down into, I call it three categories. If you're doing light to moderate, deficit, it's not in any sort of extreme amount of deficit. So day-to-day, I'd say maybe, like, 200 to 400 rates of a caloric deficit, then make sure you have a solid meal 30 minutes after your workout, something like that. You can sip on a little shake or a little bit of, you know, chocolate milk or lactate-free milk, whatever, post-workout. And it should cover your bases. You should be all right. Just time your meals around your training, you know, 30 to 60 minutes, and you'll be fine. If you're in a really extreme deficit, then it depends on your kind of programming. If you're doing like a low carb programming, for example, or you're doing some sort of programming that has very specific nutrition guidelines, then I say eat as much as you can around your training. Eat a little before, eat a little after, and basically have the bulk of your nutrition be around your training time. The more severe the deficit, and if you're going to do resistance training, which I do recommend doing in a severe deficit, then the more you have to put those meals and that nutrition around your training time, because that's really when you're going to need it the most, and it's where you're going to get your bang for your caloric buck. So if you're doing that, I usually do recommend having a liquid. It can be anything from chocolate milk to, water and some, you know, post-workout nutrition, be it just, you know, protein and a little carbohydrate, depending on your plan, or protein and a maximum amount of carbohydrates around that time. It depends on your plan. I personally don't like just no carbs unless it's a very specific and tailored plan around training. I like to be that's the time where you get your carbohydrates, and I like it to be a little bit more fast acting, higher GI kind of carbohydrates. So, but it can be in solid food form. It doesn't have to be in a shake. It can be, you know, potatoes. It can be rice. It can be pasta. It can be anything that you want it to be, really. It can be a Pop-Tart. I don't really care. It just depends on what your nutrients are, how much you have, and et cetera. So it depends, but that's just a basic general answer. The more severe that you're treating your body, the more that you have to focus on that post-workout nutrition, though. That is crucial, in my opinion. But, you know, it's a vague kind of question. So there's my vague answer.
I have a side question for you, and that is I've been running into some problems with a food scale that I bought. I bought a tailored digital food scale from my local Target location. And I've been having a lot of trouble. It's been jumping up and down quite a bit in weight. Like when I put something on, it will say 18 grams, and it will say 32 grams, and it will say 8 grams, and then it will say 27 grams. And I was just wondering, have you run into any problems with like digital food scales, or know people that have? Because I just actually just got to the point where, you know, I'm throwing it out, and I ordered a one that got like pretty good reviews on Amazon.com, and it's a little bit better quality one to, you know, because that's kind of a big deal if something's off 14 grams.
Yeah. I mean, I've had scales bounce on small levels. Like, you know, especially when you're pouring powders or anything, you know, and you're trying to measure within like 5 to 10 grams, it can take a while for the 2 to 3 grams to measure up and stuff like that. But to have that large of a bounce and with no movement, means that there's probably something wrong with the actual scale. So I think that getting a new one that was probably the right thing to do, because that's a little bit of an extreme bounce for a scale like that. Taking a little bit longer to register is one thing, but to have extreme bounces. And I guess, you know, if we're on the subject, this could be for a weight scale too, just like your average, I'm standing on a weight scale, that kind of thing. If you have large bounces like that, then chances are something's wrong and you just need to buy a new one, you know, and you don't want to risk it for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I was willing to invest into a much higher quality one because I knew at this point that I'm probably going to be, you know, I don't know if I talked about this or not, but like weighing your food is kind of addictive, and you just kind of get into a rhythm of doing it. So it just, you just get kind of really anal about things being more accurate, especially when it could screw up fat loss.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people are. It's a really heated debate, to be honest. I mean, some people are really don't like it. They don't like the concept of it. They think that it emphasizes more, you know, obsessive compulsive qualities and things like that. And I'm of the opinion that I think that it's only negative if your mindset is negative. That's the only time anything really is negative. You know, I personally love it when I'm in a cut because it makes things easy.
So easy.
To me, it makes
so
it easy. Yeah, you know, and it's also a peace of mind. And it's just like, okay, this is what I can have. It's measured out. It's done. And I know. And it's just really easy. So to me, I've always been kind of dumbfounded by people that are like, God, it's so much work. And I'm like, God, really? I just find it to be. To me, it's just, it couldn't be the easiest thing in the world if it, you know, and when it comes to recipes, it's like, oh, I don't have to worry about anything. You know, it's just, look, that's the amount that I put in, and it makes for a lot more quality recipes. And it's funny because, you know, Europeans, or basically everyone else other than the United States, work on a weight measure, and they're a lot more used to using scales. And they're a lot more, because they don't, you know, they don't really use as many cups and things as like we do, because they work on a different measuring system over there. And they're used to their recipes being in grams and ounces and things like that.
They're crazy.
and so it's funny because a lot of my clients that are overseas, it's like, it's not a problem. They're just like, oh, yeah. And but yeah, I mean, I think that it's easy. I love it. And I do think that I can find myself being like, damn it. Like I want you to be exact. And, you know, sometimes I get a little bit like that, but I certainly, to know when the limit is and not going into any sort of Jack Nicholson area or anything like that. But I don't know. To me, I think it's easy. And I think that it's a really great way to just make sure that everything's okay, because I just don't like wasting my time. Mm-hmm. It gets it done. And I know that. And it gives me a chance to have more variety, because I don't have to worry about it. Low carb diets work because it's really hard to mess up chicken breasts and broccoli, you know, but it's really easy to mess up oatmeal. It is, you know, it's really easy to mess up something like cereal. And it's easy to mess up other things like that. So, yeah, I mean, if you want a foolproof plan, don't ever eat those things. And you're probably going to be more likely to land in your caloric need. But if you like variety, which I do, or if you like being able to kind of push your caloric limits and make sure that you can get your bang for your buck, then weigh. That's just me. Yeah.
Cool. next question we have is Kim from Toronto. I know you guys have talked about Jillian Michaels' Wii game in the past, but I'm just wondering, are any of these even worth buying / using as a means of actual exercise? Fitness video games. Have you tried out any of these things?
I haven't. You know, the only ones that I have tried out are I've tried out like the Wii Sports ones. And I've tried out some of the like the Olympic Games ones, and because I love Olympic Games, I've loved Olympic Games ever since like Nintendo. I've tried out some of those, and they're fun. And I've done, I guess I can, because I'm like never gonna post up the article, but I've done a lot of testing with caloric burn and the Wii games, and it can get really impressive. It really can. You can really amp up some burn on those things. Everything from Guitar Hero to the boxings to the Mario the Olympic Games, or the I can't remember the name of it.
Mario versus Sonic in the Olympic Games. What's
thank
up?
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. That one is awesome, especially when you're doing the swimming and the rowing on that. You can hit like 5 to 6 point calories per minute, which is that's
pretty good.
Yeah. And that's for, that was for me and my size. I had this one guy did it, and he's a huge guy though. I mean, he's like 280, but I mean, he was like sweating bullets and burning like 10 calories per minute when he was in the midst of it. I mean, you know, granted it's a short game, but you do it over and over and over again, it can really get some burn. Now I have not done the Wii Fits, and I haven't done the Jillian Michaels, like any of her training, run through a course, jump over a log, all that kind of stuff that I've seen happen, the virtual boxing. I haven't seen done any of those, so I couldn't speak on that. But I can say that overall, that what I tested with the Wii games is that it is by far the best system possible to increase your caloric burn while having fun. I think the only thing that would trump it would be Dance Dance Revolution, which, you know, that can really get intense and high in caloric burn as well, and is steady. So there definitely are some video games that you can play, though, that really can amp up your caloric burn. Even Guitar Hero, playing it, and when you're really into it, you can get up to a 3.5 burn per minute, you know, and that's on the beginner to, like, moderate levels. I wouldn't know about the advanced, because I just play regular guitar. I that thing makes me dizzy.
We got to get you up to at least hard. Come on.
Well, you know what? How about this? I can do that stuff on the guitar for real. So
no, it's not the same. It's not
so,
as cool.
You know, it makes me dizzy, though. It's funny because
I
don't
know. Watching the
lines? Yeah, like, I literally, it was funny because I got it around Christmas. I got it around Christmas, and I was playing it, like, a lot, because I was really excited about it and it was fun. And me and my friend were playing it over and over and over again. And I had to get the Pat Benatar Heartbreaker down. And so I'm playing it. And like, I sat down and it was her turn. She was playing. And I look at my Christmas tree and it was fading in and out at me. And all the little bubble lights on it and everything were like zooming in and out. And like, I was like tripping. And I turned her and I was like, okay, like, I do not feel right. I like feel kind of sick. And she was like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, but like the Christmas tree is like seriously moving. And I was like, I hadn't had anything to drink. And I was like, I'm not drunk or anything. So this is kind of weirding me out. And it went away. I didn't make the connection. And so then, like, I started playing the game again, and I was, like, getting really into it and really aggressive. And then I sat back down, and I looked at the tree again, and it was moving. And I was like, oh, it's the lines, because I was watching it zoom in and out, and it made me, like, it messed with me, like, that much. And so, yeah, and then I started to get kind of sick, but I get sick easily anyway. If you spin me, like, three times, I'm, like, dizzy. But that was a completely unnecessary story. But just for anyone who may be feeling that same kind of pain with the Guitar Hero.
You'd be surprised. I mean, if you ever turn against people who listen to this, they'll know how to take you down. So just spin you around a couple times.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I dance and I spin when I dance and I still get really dizzy. I try to do it anyway, but I still get really dizzy. I get thrown off my balance really easy like that. I have bad equilibrium.
Bummer.
It's just bad ramble. Okay, next.
Well, I mean, just quickly, I did some statistics, evidence-based research on Amazon.com this morning. And, you know what? It's very interesting because, you know, I've been kind of following this, kind of not been following this, but EA Sports, who makes, like, the Madden games and NBA Live, they have their own fitness game coming out called EA Sports Active, which instead of it's more of like a personal trainer, and you're training with them, and it comes with exercise bands, and you can set it up so one of the remotes like sticks to your leg, so it can actually measure when you're, you know, if you're like running in place and stuff like that. So I think that might be kind of a cool alternative.
That sounds neat.
Yeah, and it's $60 compared to $90 because Wii Fit comes with the balance board. And also, two or three more quick things I want to say. Out of the top 10 selling Wii games right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are exercise games or exercise products for the Wii. So, like, this is going to be, you know, a pretty big market, and the loser right now is Jillian Michaels, who's not all the way down on number 38 with 341 reviews, averaging 2 stars. So I guess that game sucks.
Guess it didn't go over well, huh?
No, but they still sold, like, 2 million copies, and they're making a sequel to it. So it says something. But the very last thing is I just got the new version of Punch-Out for the Nintendo Wii. And
whoa, like Mike Tyson Punch-Out?
It's Mike Tyson Punch-Out, but without the, you know, the whole... It's a complete remake of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and Super Punch-Out.
Russian.
What's that?
Does it have the Russian?
Soda Popsinski?
Yes, that's his name. That's awesome.
It has all the racial stereotypes that you remember from the old NES days.
I hate that there wasn't, like, an Eskimo, you know, like, with a harpoon.
Well, there's like, a disco kid, so they got that stereotype. They have King Hippo, who's a islander who eats pineapple. So, you know, the game itself is kind of wacky, But the reason I bring this up is now you have two options to play the game. You can either turn the Wii remote sideways and play with the old, you know, A and B buttons like you normally would, or you can plug in the, or I should say there's three ways to play. Then you can plug in the whatever the other part is with the joystick on it, and you can actually use your hands to punch guys, and then if you turn your hands to the side, you'll actually, you know, veer to the side to dodge punches. The third way, you can actually hook up the Wii balance board that comes with Wii Fit, and you can, you know, lean to the right and lean to the left to dodge instead as well, which I hooked that up and tried it out, and it works, but it's really not, like, difficult. You're just standing up and leaning to the right and left, but if you do that while punching with your arms, I'm sure, you know, it's still pretty good physical activity instead of, you know, sitting on your butt and hitting the buttons. And the game is phenomenal. If you either play the old Punch-Out or you like, if you like to have fun, this is something you should buy. And I expect you to buy it, Lee.
I'm so excited. I have the joy stick, whatever, but where you connect it, and so you can use both.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited.
Yeah.
That's just the best news ever, because I loved that game when I was growing up. I loved it. I'm such a dork, but I loved it.
It's great, but it's, you know, the only thing I'm going to warn people, you know, parents or anything like that, it is, you know, mildly racist.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, and like the first guy, Glass Joe, who's the easy guy to kind of get you warmed up, he's French, and when you punch him out, croissants come flying out of him, and he's like a huge wuss. I'm not saying French people are wusses. I'm saying that's what Nintendo thinks.
Oh.
So
I don't think you're going to have an audience left by the end of this podcast.
Vive la France. Come on. What's up? Okay, whatever. Let's go to the next question, because that's going nowhere. This is from Steph from Colorado. Hey, Kevin and crew, love the show, especially when Jonathan just loses it. LOL. I can't believe I just said that. I have
Spanish. It's not French.
Oh, whatever. Whatever. You know.
Continue on. I just think it's so fun.
I took 5 years of Spanish, and I no joke, I averaged between a D plus and a C through all 5 years. Aww. It was a requirement, and you know what? I do not want to learn a second language. But anyway, Steph has a question about types of fat. Should I be taking both flax and fish oils? What about coconut oil? Are there different uses for each? Thanks.
I'll keep it simple. There's a lot of different oils that you can use, and different oils there's some that can have some different benefits. And to be honest, if you're really gonna care and go into details of like getting specific, just read up on individual foods and properties and oils and what they do for you to learn which is what. But I personally think if you want to keep it really, really simple, don't fuss around and do what is probably going to be the best for you. Just keep to a simple, just omega-3 fish oil, you know, good EPA, DHA. I like 6 to 10 grams a day, and just leave it at that. And you can get it at Costco. You can get it at Vitamin Shoppe. You can get it wherever, and just keep it really simple. You know, anything else, just make with food that you eat that you enjoy, and if you want to have it in that way, then you know, be it an avocado, be it olive oil, be it coconut oil, that's fine. But you know, if you wanted to talk about the properties of coconut oil, the properties of this oil, then you can send that question in. But as far as just for your general health benefit and what keeps it as easy, there you go. That's all you need.
Cool, Steph. Go get some fish oil. You probably eat pretty well being from Colorado, though. They're usually pretty healthy people. Again, another stereotype. The next question comes from Tom. Hey, Kevin, what is this PB2 stuff that you talk about on your Destination Abs blog? Is it a peanut butter substitute or something? Tom, let's talk about PB2 for a second. PB2, it's powdered peanut butter where they press all the oil out of the peanuts, and they sell you the result, the everything pretty much but the oil that they squeezed out in a powdered form. It's good.
It's amazing. It's awesome. There's nothing bad about it, and you can I think that you can get it in individual jars now on the PB2 site. Can you?
Yeah, I mean, I would buy in bulk just because the shipping.
I buy in bulk. Yeah, I buy in bulk. But I know some people, when they first want to try it, they get like, oh, I don't want to buy like a whole package. And you know, that's fine. I know that you can get it off the Nutrition, just one jar at a time. I don't know if you can off the main site, because I always just buy in bulk. But I know that you can off the Nutrition. You can get just one jar at a time if you desire. But I highly recommend taking the chance, because even if you buy it in bulk and you don't like it on its own, like if you just mix it with like some water or milk or whatever, you can still throw it in a shake, and it's like the essence of peanut butter in a shake.
Perfect, yeah.
It's very yummy. So, yeah, definitely go for it.
It works great with Black Star Labs chocolate protein powder when you want to just make that perfect chocolate peanut butter. Yeah. But that's how I generally use it. It's bellplantations.com is their website, and they also have a store finder on the website, so there's like an actual possibility that you could just get in the car, drive to the store, and pick some up. Although I'm sure you're going to get a much better discount buying in bulk directly from them. Sean has a question. This one is for Lee. I listened to your binge eating podcast the other day and wanted to know if you could elaborate on the whole "it is okay when your body needs it" versus "when you are just hungry." Keep up the great work, guys, and send me a t-shirt. Sean, that's not how you get a free t-shirt. You get to mention boobs.
Yep. So you could have said, you know, versus when you're just hungry and want to nibble on...
What the hell?
I was trying to think of a way to make it work for Sean, but, you know, that's fine. Whatever. I was talking about...
Epic fail of the week right there, folks.
You know what?
You can give out the Pink Dumbo Award if you want. Get someone a free t-shirt.
Okay.
Just don't give it to Sean.
We're not giving it to Sean. And now I'm just mad about the whole thing because Kevin said I failed. So. I thought it was funny. Okay, so I said on the binge eating podcast that what I was talking about is I was talking about why people binge. Just for a recap for anyone who's listening, I was talking about why people binge, what you should do after you binge, and you know, kind of what led up to it, etc. And what Sean, I'm guessing, is asking about is when I said that sometimes a binge, and, you know, it's funny because Kevin, me and you were talking about this, you know, recently, but sometimes when you binge, it's really when, it's not necessarily weak-willed, it's when your body needs it. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is when, you know, when you're dieting down and you're in a deficit, you're depleting your body, you're lowering, you know, your body's defenses, certain hormones are getting stronger, other ones are getting weaker. Like, for example, your hunger hormones get stronger, your you know, metabolic firing hormones, your T, your thyroid levels, things like that, they're not producing as strong, your leptin lowers, things like that, all these kind of things. There's a lot more too, but basically there's a cascade effect where things are shutting down. You know, they move slower and slower and slower to compensate for the fact that you're pulling more and more energy from storage than you are bringing in from the outside. So when you're pulling more energy from storage instead of bringing it in from the outside, your body sees this as a warning. Your body sees this as a sign that it does not enjoy this. And it's going to halt certain processes. It can only do that for so long before it goes into, you know, for lack of a better word, or for lack of getting too unscientific, a panic. You know, it's going to go into kind of a little bit of a panic, and it's going to say, I don't like this. I need food. And I need food now because I want to stop what's going on. When you're a healthy individual, that signal's going to work really well. And you're going to find that after, you know, a couple weeks or so, or if you've been very diligent, that signal is going to go off and it's going to say, feed me, you know. And this is why you like, when you're doing a dieting program, to try and set up structured refeeds so that you don't end up going into these moments, so that you end up feeding without having to have these alarms go off. Some people can push them longer than others, and it's very dependent upon the kind of person that you are and how your body responds to a diet. Some people feel like they're having one in a day when, you know, they're not necessarily, but a lot of people I've seen, it's a 2-week mark. It just seems to be this like constant 2-week mark. Like the body can only seem to, no matter how severe or unsevere the deficit is, I can't get over it. My research and my clients time and time again, it's like this 2-week mark will come and their defenses start to get lower and they start to get weaker and they need to eat. And that's what I mean by that statement. And so your body senses that it needs more. You take it in. And you take it into the amount in which that you're okay, and that you're refilled, if you will, and your body says, okay, I'm good. And then you move back into the deficit and so on from there. So what I recommend doing for people is to structure a diet so that you implement refeeds. And I don't consider them cheats. You know, a lot of people, you know, that whole cheat and, you know, have your pizza and ice cream and all that, that's fine. I mean, you can have whatever you want when you refeed. You can have potatoes or you can have pizza and ice cream. I don't care. But I just like to call it a structured refeed. And just to get your body back on track. And depending on your diet and program is how often they should happen or how much you should eat when you do it, how many days or hours, et cetera, that varies. But that's what I mean by when your body needs it. And that's what I would do. I would recommend setting it up so that the binge doesn't happen or it's less likely to happen. But if it does happen and you've been really diligent with your program, then don't beat yourself up about it so much because chances are you just did need it and hop back on and don't feel like as if that it was weak will. It was sanity and you listening to your body. It's the people that take it too far and that never break that cycle that usually end up in trouble. Other just end up maybe a little frustrated at worst case scenario, but you know, the people that never take that refeed and are scared of it because they're scared of the water gain or the bounce back and weight or things like that are the people that end up getting in trouble.
Cool. The last question we have comes from Luke. Hi, FitCast. I'm 19 and going to school to get a degree in exercise science to hopefully do what you guys do when I get older. I'm still 3 years out from graduating, but I was wondering what some good books would be to increase my knowledge over the summer. And off topic, can you guys talk about your childhood memories of games? I know Tony and John both said they play Nintendo or something as kids. Luke, we're going to save that for next week. But we will answer your question, the first part of your question. Sorry, I kind of paused for a second. Look, I'm going to tell you a couple books that are, you know, are kind of staples that you should have. And one of them is probably going to be as part of your curriculum, and that's Essentials of Strength Training and Conditioning, which you're probably going to need to get anyways if you want to become CSCS certified. So that one might be worth looking into. I would see first if that's going to be part of your course, you know, requirements. But you know, one really good book that has helped me out a lot lately is I'm going through Stuart McGill's Ultimate Back Fitness and Performance book, which is outstanding. And you know, for some reason, sometimes it takes a couple different explanations for things to click with me. You know, sometimes like I'll have to watch a DVD two or three times, or you know, someone might tell me something in one book or at a seminar or, you know, listening to a podcast, but sometimes it just takes, you know, someone else to explain it to me for me to understand it. And that's what's kind of happening with McGill's book. So it's kind of expensive. It's like $60 or $70, but it's definitely worth picking up maybe as a, it might be kind of a lame Christmas present or a holiday gift, but it might be worth asking for. And, another one that is, you know, kind of sort of old, but is, you know, it's not necessarily the greatest book anymore, but Core Performance still kind of holds up when you look at some of the principles there. You know, I wouldn't really take the program out of it and then do that program. It's not really something anyone should do. And also just some cheaper books like Maximum Strength from Eric Cressy and Neuro's Lifting with Alan Cosgrove and Lou Schuler is really good as well. And also, you know what, the Fat Loss Troubleshoot, it's the nutrition Bible. You know, I read it every night before I go to bed just to make sure I have nice and pleasant dreams. And the next day, I just feel like weight has been lifted off me and I just float on.
Nice choice of words.
Yeah, I know, right? And I just kind of go off and I try to do great things in the world. Lee, what do you think? What do you think Luke should read if he's just trying to get like a, you know, the basics down?
You know, I thought those were some really good recommendations. To throw in a couple more, if you're in a college kind of level, and so therefore you're this is your job, you know, you want this to be your career.
Yeah.
In addition to things like that, I would definitely start keeping an eye on, you know, PubMed and looking at research that comes out. It can be a little daunting at first. It can be a little migraine forming at first. But once you get the hang of it and you get immersed in it, it's really, these are, you know, because when the books come out, especially college books and editions like that, they're based off of studies, they're based off of research, but they're many years behind. And it takes a while to kind of get that information out and then edited in a book, that book published, etc. So, you know, one of the things that you can do to kind of stay ahead of the game is to look at the research as it comes out. So I highly recommend doing that. So because of that, if you're finding a gateway drug, if you will, into that world, I'd recommend Alan Argon's research review.
Great point. Yeah.
And I definitely think that that's a good area that you can go in. He's a little technical, but never so much that you can't understand. And it's a really good gateway into reading research and to understanding it. And I think that if you're a trainer and you're trying to stay ahead of the pack in the game right now, you know, beyond your physique, you know, build that brain and really understand where the information comes from in the first place. So that's definitely a good one. It's $10 a month and well worth it. And I can assure you that the studies, well, granted you're in college, so make use of that while you have it, really. But, you know, they're not cheap. So beyond that, though, once you have the kind of study thing out of the way, I like to add in addition, for a little bit more heavier reading, I like The Neuromechanics of Human Movement. It's by Roger Enoka, and it's a good book. It goes into a lot more. It's heavy. It's not a light read, but it's good. It goes into a little bit more detail about the mechanics of moving and things like that. And it's an interesting read from that perspective. And then if you're looking for a little bit more of a layman's thing, I like Ripto's Starting Strength and Practical Programming. I think both of those are really good, and it can kind of help you more with just general population work, programming design, things like that. So I think through all that you're definitely covered for a while, Luke.
Yeah, do it. Pull out the parents' credit card and start ordering that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tell them first, but then start ordering that stuff. Yeah. I think that's going to do it. And, you know, I can definitely vouch for that. I just started subscribing to Alan's research review a couple months ago, and it's nice to have someone kind of break everything down for you, and it just takes a little load off your shoulders as well. I'm sure you got plenty of holy shit, it's raining outside my house right now. Can you hear that?
Yeah, all of a sudden it just, like, it went from the little canary that I've been hearing for, you know, an hour to a monsoon.
Wow. That's a lot. Excuse my language. But the, yeah, that's it. So get your summer reading done, Luke, and that's going to do it for us. So before we do go, of course, don't forget, John Barty is going to be coming right up in like two minutes. So just make sure to remember that. And the, a couple things I just want to remind you of. Check us out on iTunes. Please submit a review if you haven't already. Hit the subscribe button like 40 times because that bumps us up in the rankings. Don't tell anyone I told you that. And the fitcast.com, where I'm going to have an update to Destination Abs and probably pictures of Tony's prom. Who knows? It depends how the weekend goes. Last but not least, check out Lee's site at avidityfitness.net, and eventually I will never have to say that ever again.
Hopefully that's the last time you have to say it. And I do have to correct the statement that I made earlier real quick. I was wrong about the Viva la France thing. Apparently that is a common French saying.
That's right, folks. That's
so
how we're going to end it.
If I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. And I was wrong, Kevin. I'm very sorry.
No, it's all right. You know, there's a time in everyone's life where they just have to... No, I'm not old enough to say that. All right. All right, that's it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Stick around. We will be talking to John Barty in just a second.
Michael Boyle, strengthcoach.com, the number one source of performance enhancement information on the Internet. Are you looking for cutting-edge information updated almost every day? Do you like info-packed forums with almost real-time answers from industry experts? then log on to www.strengthcoach.com. For only $1 for 14 days, you can test drive the number one source of performance enhancement information on the internet, strengthcoach.com. Have you logged on today?
If you want to get the best tasting, highest quality protein powder out there, you got to go to blackstarlabs.com. Now with new discounted prices, so you can save more than ever. With me right now is Dr. John Berardi of PrecisionNutrition.com, and he's also the author of Precision Nutrition Program and the Metabolism Advantage, and he's a multi-time guest of the FitCast. JB, it's a great pleasure to have you back on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it, and I look forward to talking with you about a lot of cool stuff that we got going on, and you know, hopefully everyone listening in is going to have a real good experience and learn a lot of cool stuff.
Well, the first thing that I want to talk about is the Lean Eating Coaching Program that you guys have going on at PrecisionNutrition.com. Can you just start off by talking about what that is and kind of, you know, why you guys are doing that?
Yeah, we might as well start off with that because that's the most timely, because in 48 hours we're actually opening it up. And so that'll be on Tuesday, the 26th. And, you know, the thing in the past has sold out in like 6 hours. So, you know, we might as well start off with that and give people the chance if they're interested. But basically, the Lean Eating Coaching Program was born out of, you know, people's interest to work with us in a coaching capacity. I mean, over the last, I don't know, 12 years or so, you know, we've worked with high-level athletes and even recreational athletes to help them get in the best shape of their lives. But, you know, when you do one-on-one coaching relationships, as you know, Kev, you can only work with so many people. And, you know, it got to the point where, and anyone who coaches, you know, in a distance-based capacity via the internet, for example, sort of comes up with this sort of upper limit of amount of number of clients they could work with. And usually it's somewhere between 20 and 40. So at any point in time, you just simply can't work with more than that, or else they don't get the level of service and quality that they deserve. Now, fortunate for me in Precision Nutrition, we've grown to the point now where we've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of people on our newsletter list. We've got, you know, we've worked with over 50 or 60,000 clients through our Precision Nutrition system and our online community. And it's gotten to the point where so many people want to work with us in that capacity. And we just had to say no. And we're saying no like 150 times a week to clients. And it started to bother me because, as you know, Kev, there's some great people that they can turn to out there, but they're far, few and far between. You know, you're not going to find great coaching necessarily unless you're really lucky in your local area. You might find a decent personal trainer per se, but someone who goes out and does internships and knows the research and has worked with high-level people and has worked with enough people to be able to know how to solve problems that come up, that's pretty rare. So we just kind of said, instead of leaving these people hanging, is there a way that we can help them? Is there a way that we can coach them? So we created the Lean Eating Coaching Program, where we take 100 men and 100 women on. So there's Lean Eating for men, Lean Eating for women, for 6 months. And we coach them through the process of body change or body transformation, if you want to call it. So we help them lose fat and gain lean mass. But and that's all very interesting. And for everyone listening in, that's probably why they're listening in. That's probably why they do fitness and eat well, so they can look better and feel better. But the one thing that's emerged, and we've run several cohorts now through the Lean Eating Program, is that not only are people changing their bodies, they're changing their entire relationships with food. And while that sounds really vague and touchy-feely, and, you know, as a scientist, it sits wrong a little bit with me, it can't be denied when you start working with people who you know, have spent 5 or 10 years working out and trying to eat better and has sort of been wallowing and stagnant, come in, and it's not like we're just telling them how to eat, although we help them with that. We're telling them how to train, although we give them training programs. We're also changing their relationship to training and food so they understand it in a new way, and in a way that makes it a very powerful tool for them rather than a frustration. And, you know, people can go on and see the results of this, you know, on our forum community, on our member zone, where you can just see hundreds and hundreds of people have gone through the program, and you see these great changes. I mean, when you look at the guys, they're losing between 25 and 35 pounds of fat in the six-month program. Women are usually losing between 15 and 25 pounds of fat. But beyond that, you hear all these great stories about how their confidence is boosted like it never has before, or how they used to have this really weird relationship with food where it was either like this comforting factor or this enemy for them. And now all of a sudden, they feel great about food. They feel happy about, you know, what eating healthy means and about training. So it's a pretty powerful thing. I mean, it's basically taking people from a place of kind of not understanding their body, not understanding eating and exercise, and understanding it so well that they can manipulate their body at will at the end of the course. So again, you know, we work with them for 6 months and we show them how to do all this. So we provide their training programs. We coach them through the eating programs. But it's not just a situation, I should be really clear on this, where people come in and we send them a diet every week or every day or whatever and say, eat this and we'll talk to you next week or tomorrow or whatever. You know, it's habit-based. So in the beginning, we actually introduce a new habit every so often, and that's all we want them to do, to incorporate that new habit. And then after we get over the habit-building stage so that these things become second nature, then we start, you know, sort of helping, coaching them through the process of designing their own menu. And then they just record their menu. They journal it for us, and then we help them make tweaks. So it's not sort of – I always consider the internet having the possibility to have these sort of push-pull relationships. So coaching on the internet is usually a push relationship. So I basically push information down to you, and then you have to go do it. But with the lean eating coaching, it's not that at all. It's really kind of pull, where the coaching clients are out there and they're kind of pulling help down from us into their world, and that's how we're helping them get lose fat and gain muscle and just feel better, look better, and get a better relationship with food and exercise. So that's the program. Like I said, it's kicking off on Tuesday. It's, you know, spots are pretty limited. Like I said, we've got 100 men and 100 women that come into it. We offer the thing only every 6 months, so we won't offer it again in 2009. It'll be 2010 when we offer it. But like I said, I mean, it's a pretty powerful program, and people can actually check out a little bit more about it if they just pop over the Precision Nutrition site. They can just log in, and in our blog, the last couple posts have been videos where I just talk people kind of through the process of lean eating coaching and what it is. And this last part, and if what I have said so far isn't as incentive enough to at least check it out, we actually devoted about $20,000 in prize money to this particular upcoming cohort. So the best male body transformation wins 10 grand. And the best female body transformation also wins 10 grand. So, you know, that's a huge prize.
Definitely.
And we're expecting people to get kind of motivated by it. And rather than it being one of these kind of marketing gimmicks, which it's easy to kind of see it as that, you know, I've discovered that these types of incentives are powerful motivators for people. And to put it crudely, motivation for, you know, getting in shape usually comes from two areas. One is the carrot, so that's like some kind of reward in the future that you could get for doing this. And then the other is the stick, so sort of like a punishment for not doing it when you said you would. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I find that balance, you know, and the carrot and the stick is a crude analogy. But when you give people a powerful carrot or motivational incentive, you know, something positive to look forward to, they stick to the plan when motivation wanes, and it always does, especially over a six-month program. You're not going to feel super pumped 5 months in like you did the first week. So there needs to be something remaining. So that carrot, that 10 grand is awesome and it's huge, and if you win it, it's a nice little bonus for the year. But more than that, it helps you stick to the program. And then we have other technologies that help with the stick part, that help almost set up a punishment incentive so that even when you say, oh, you know what, forget it, I'm probably not going to win the 10 grand anyway, there's a potential punishment on the other end of the line. And again, I can't really punish people, But we help them use this concept of carrot and the stick to make sure they stay motivated when they might not have ever been motivated before or tried programs like this before and never been able to stick it through. So, you know, we're using coaching psychology, we're using 20 grand, and it's a pretty powerful program.
So, you know, one big thing that I found, you know, in my own ventures in terms of physique, but also with my clients, is the concept of like accountability. You know, how are you able to keep these clients accountable?
Well, you know, we have a coaching platform, and that makes it sound all technical. But what happens is when people log into our website and they're a Lean Eating Coaching member, they get a completely different experience than if they're a Precision Nutrition client or member currently. We have a coaching platform where basically every day you log in and you have to tell us how you did. And it's just like a 5 or 10 minute login, but we keep statistics on that. And then everyone has a coach that they directly interact with. And then you have to keep certain metrics or markers of how you're doing. So it's not just, again, a push relationship. Hey, we're pushing down exercise information and you just go do it. You're actually pulling stuff from us and we're pulling stuff back. We're pulling feedback. And one way to say it is it's almost like we have a Facebook for coaching. Mm-hmm. So it's this really cool application where you can upload your progress photos. You can interact with your coaches. You can interact with other coaching members. So it's like a social support community. And that's actually what I've been talking about lately when we're talking about the program. You know, I love this quote that I've heard a few years back, which is, you are the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. And it's absolutely true. You know, if you spend time with people who are pursuing lofty goals, you're going to do the same thing. It's just going to be contagious. And contrary, if you spend time with people who are, you know, overweight or drinking a lot of alcohol or eating the wrong foods, you're going to slowly be influenced to do more of that. And, you know, anyone who's had an antagonistic spouse when they tried to get in shape, or an antagonistic coworkers when they go to work, will understand what I'm talking about here. It gets hard, and you have to set up this me versus the world kind of experience in your life when you have negative social support. And so many people just think that's normal, and that's what fitness means. It's me versus the world. But the interesting thing is when you set up a good social support circle, it's not. It's this awesome crew of really supportive, helpful people. And that's what we create with Lean Eating Coaching. There's a whole group. You have 99 other people in your cohort who are doing the same thing you are and encountering the same issues. So it's not you versus the world all of a sudden. It's you and this awesome group of supportive people. So that's how we keep accountability. It's both to coaches. It's both to our record-keeping system, if you want to call it that, and then it's also to your peer group, people who you know are getting it done on the other end of the computer, if you will, and it gives you that motivation to do it yourself. So, again, I mean, we you know, I'm kind of known as the nutrition guy, for better or worse, but, you know, the last few years I've spent more time on figuring out how to help people change, because really – you know, and I've said this for a long time, I could give someone a diet and they can post it up on their fridge, but that doesn't mean that they're going to do it. That doesn't mean that when things get hard, or they go to a birthday party, or they go to a work party, or they have negative social influences, or they go on a business trip, that they're going to be able to do it, that they're going to stick with that plan, that they're going to find motivation and find problem-solving strategies when they're out there in the real world and faced with real world challenges. And that's the difference between just taking a nutrition approach versus taking a lifestyle and a psychology approach. And that's what we've gotten very, very good at. We've run a lot of cohorts through this. We actually do complete psychological profiling when we run our cohorts, so we know what people are like and how they respond to different interventions. So that's how we make this thing work, and it works fantastically well. And, you know, Kev, I know you're doing a lot of coaching and personal training now, and that's where I got started. I mean, I paid my way through university and multiple graduate degrees training people in the gym, and I wish I had this kind of knowledge back then. And I know that if I did, my success rate would have been a lot higher, because back then, here was my philosophy. I'm going to tell people what they need to do to change their bodies. If they do it, awesome, they rock. If they don't, too bad, they suck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's crude, but that's how most people operate. I'm just going to give you the tools, and if you don't have the discipline to do it, screw off. And, you know, when I was younger, that seemed like a good philosophy, but the reality was that my success rate was abysmal because of it. The people who were motivated got great results. The people who weren't, or whatever I called motivation, didn't get any results, and I blamed it on them. It was their fault. But I realized quite quickly that a good coach recognizes that if your client isn't getting a result, it's your fault, not theirs. You weren't able to communicate the information properly. You weren't able to help them in the way they needed to be helped. And when you take personal responsibility for other people's results, even if you think they're lazy or undisciplined or unmotivated, it's amazing how you force yourself to get better.
The next thing I wanted to discuss a little bit about the program is, you know, is this just going to be for people who want to lose fat, or is this also for people who, you know, want to also improve their physique in terms of just building lean body mass as well?
Yeah, well, I'll say the program's predominantly designed for people who want to lose fat. The men's program is shaped towards like a body transformation kind of thing, because we know most guys really, they want to gain lean mass while losing body fat. So that's kind of how we designed the strength and conditioning workouts, and that's how the program's designed. It's predominantly a fat loss program, though, or a shape-up program, or loose fat, or whatever you want to call it. So if someone wants to come in to go from scrawny to brawny and build a lot of muscle, it's probably not the right program for them. However, if someone has fat to lose, it's certainly for them. And even more than that, you know, making it all about body fat is kind of simplistic to me, you know, and I'm not saying that's your fault. It's in the way you phrased it at all. I'm just saying that that's how a lot of people enter into programs like this. Oh, I just, if I lost 20 pounds, my life would be better, or mm-hmm. I'd be happier about myself or whatever. But that's so sort of simplistic and isolationist that that's not how the world works. You don't just lose 20 pounds and things change. And that's not how we do the program. It's for people who want to lose fat. Absolutely. But we joke that that's a side effect of what we're actually accomplishing, which is teaching people how to have the better habits in their lives. I mean, we could certainly bring people in and help them crash down and lose a lot of body fat, like, you know, the old get shredded diet that we help people with when they're doing a pre-contest preparation, or something like the velocity diet or whatever. But we know that those habits are not built to be sustainable. And what we do in lean eating coaching is we teach people how to lose fat. And in the process, they're building habits that they can follow for the rest of their lives. And that's one of the – we do these, I guess, exit exams, if you want to call them. So when people end the program, we do – you know, we call them up and we have questions that we ask them. And, you know, the responses are always things like, this is the first time in my life I know that I can continue to keep the fat off, or that I can continue to progress towards my fat loss goals when this program's over. And that's the greatest compliment we can get. It's that people feel empowered now to maintain what they've achieved, or even do better on their own without our help. That means we coach them properly. That means we created self-sustaining progress rather than just a you know, extreme diet that rips you down for now, and then you're battling the yo-yo for the rest of your life.
Now let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of the research that you've been doing, because I know one of the biggest requests that we have for when you do come on the show is to talk about, you know, what's the latest and greatest research that you've been doing, or some of the things that you've been reading that has kind of piqued your interest. So let's jump into that.
Well, you know, one thing that we've been doing a lot of on our site is we've been doing what's called these informal experiments. I don't know if you've followed any of them, Kev, but what we do is, you know, we had this revelation, really, that, you know, and it's mostly because we have a bunch of people who did masters and PhDs on our team, where going through your masters and your PhD, the subjects that you can research with are usually university students. So, you know, you're basically standing out in the hallway, carnival barking your way to get some clients or some subjects for your studies. And, you know, you're passing out flyers around university because that's the population that's around in university towns. And it's a struggle always. It's a struggle to get, you know, enough research participants in your studies. There's not a lot of money often to go around, especially in this field. So you can only pay them a pittance. And what ends up happening is you get studies on interesting topics done on the wrong populations. So, you know, when I talk about the latest nutrition study to, you know, something like the people who listen to the FitCast, this isn't the typical university student probably that's listening in. There's probably lots of them, but they're certainly not the typical ones. You know, they're not the ones who were like, nah, whatever, sorry, I missed my research appointment today. I got really drunk last night and I couldn't wake up. You know what I mean? The people who are listening to this show or reading my website are people who are keen on fitness. You know, they're eating well, they're exercising, they've probably been doing so for a long time, or at least a short time, but want to be doing it for a long time. And that's not the same population as the typical college student that you have to pay to come do a research study for you. So there's some real challenges, not only with recruiting, but also with applicability of the research. So we started thinking about it, and we said, you know, we have a mailing list of a couple hundred thousand people, you know, that read our site that are the right population. They are the people who want to know this fitness and nutrition related research, and they're the population that would apply it. So wouldn't it be awesome if we could do studies on them? So what we did, we started this informal experiments project where, you know, we send out a mailing and we say, hey, we've got this project coming up. Do you want to participate? And so we do nutrition ones and supplement ones and exercise ones. And then we collect data. Now, it's all distance based. So it has to be stuff that people can self-report. And I'll give you some examples of what that looks like. But I'll tell you the last two experiments and what they look like and how they worked. So the two experiments ago, we just finished a new one with Alan Cosgrove, which went really well. But two experiments ago, you know, I've been talking about it for a long time, green supplements, right? You've heard me talk about it. I've talked about it on the show, Kevin. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one problem with the idea behind green supplements and is that every greens company promoted the fact that it has this really powerful acid-base effect, right? Yes. So it alkalinizes your body. It fights dietary acidity, which is great. And in theory, it should have happened just like that. But there was never a single study showing that it was actually true, that that actually happened. Despite the fact that everyone was talking about it, they were talking about theory, not real research. So we said, why don't we do that study? So we emailed and we got about 75 people who were interested in doing that study. And we sent them basically like a placebo or a green supplement. Okay. So it was just an unlabeled bottle. Okay. It didn't matter what brand. They didn't know what brand it was, whatever. So we sent them the stuff. And for 2 weeks, we had them, you know, take the placebo thing and just pee onto a urine test strip. Okay, so you pee in a little cup, you dip a little urine test strip, and that tells you your blood, your urine's pH. And then what we did was the next 2 weeks we gave them the green supplement, and we had them do the same thing. So for the first time, we actually documented what happens when someone takes a green supplement to their urine, which is a good proxy marker for whole body base and acid balance. And so, you know, we had something like 60-something subjects complete the study. And at the end of it, we discovered, yes, indeed, green supplements do alkalinize the urine, which in turn means that they alkalinize the body. And it was a pretty powerful effect. Mm-hmm. So that was really, really cool because we were able to document that. And then we went on and we actually published it in a sports nutrition journal. And so that was really cool because not only is this something that is very applicable, we're using fit, exercising, healthy eating people for our research. But we're actually doing this stuff outside of a university environment, and it's working. We're getting this stuff published. So, I mean, I'm super excited about this. And so we just keep cranking out research now. The latest study we did was, you know, I wanted to know in the real world, you know, there's all this talk about, you know, high intensity interval training or sprint interval training versus steady state cardio and which one is better. And, you know, after years and maybe four, five years of being hammered with the idea that steady state cardio sucks, most people who are really, really in the know realize that that is simply not a true statement. Now, you've probably had Alan Cosgrove on the show. Alan's a great friend of mine. And he's been sort of the champion of, you know, hey, you got to do intervals if you want to lose fat appropriately. Mm-hmm. And so most people will say, well, Alan's clearly the guy who started the steady state cardio sucks, right? But the funny thing is I've gone out and stayed with him and Rachel at their house. And Alan and I would wake up in the morning and go for a steady state cardio walk. So it's really, really funny because people would be like, no, you just blew my paradigm here. People don't think steady state cardio sucks. What they think is that if you do it only, then it probably sucks. Or that if you're not doing some high intensity work, you're not getting the best benefits either. So what we wanted to do was do a study where we put head to head three different groups. All three groups got the same strength training program, and Alan Cosgrove designed the strength training programs. Then the first group did steady state cardio for between 30 and 45 minutes. And what we did each 2 weeks, we bumped up the intensity, so it was progressive. The second group, instead of doing steady state cardio, they did about the same duration of intervals. And then the third group, instead of doing either, did TRX suspension training, conditioning workouts. So I don't know if everyone's familiar with TRX suspension training, but they're basically these wraps and these handles. They're like these suspension straps. And you can do all these cool bodyweight exercises with them in a circuit fashion. So it was basically like a bodyweight-based circuit training that was done like intervals. And so we designed these special workouts for that. And we compared the three groups. So group one did 2 days of strength training and 2 days of steady state cardio. Group two did 2 days of strength training and 2 days of intervals. And group three did 2 days of strength training and 2 days of the TRX conditioning circuits. And we wanted to see what would happen, which group would do better, and if there was any real difference in body weight lost or performance outcomes. So we measured body weight, and we measured a whole host of performance outcomes, things like max push-ups, max inverted rows, standing broad jumps, VMAX and TMAX, which are treadmill tests that get at both anaerobic and aerobic fitness. And so we did all those tests. We had the people train for 8 weeks, and we had on average about 20 people in each group, and we saw what happened. And actually, I just wrote up the study results like 2 days ago. So it's like brand new. It's going to go up on the site in a couple days. We've actually published the workouts that they did a few weeks back. So if people want to check those out, they can come to the site. But the results are coming out in probably 2 weeks. I'll probably have the results up. But here's the interesting part. There are no differences between their groups. I know I'm spilling the beans here, but there were no important differences between the groups. All three groups lost the same amount of body weight. All three groups saw the same improvements in performance. The only difference that I found was actually fascinating was that in the TRX conditioning group, the dropout rate was half of the steady state cardio group. And in the interval group, the dropout rate was something like 25% of the steady state cardio group, which means – when I tell you the dropout rates, you'll be like, whoa, 80% of the people that started – the steady state cardio group dropped out. And the number one reason was because they were bored.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
They literally just hate doing steady state cardio workouts. There's probably some subconscious bias where after a few weeks they were like, oh, I know this isn't going to work because I didn't get in the good group or something. You know, I know intervals are way better. And shame on them because they would have saw the same progress if they would have stuck it out. But nevertheless, you know, it's – and this might be the most important factor. So my conclusion was that if you're doing good, properly designed strength training, it probably doesn't matter what your energy system's work is as long as it's progressive. If you're just walking on the treadmill at 3 miles an hour always, then you're not going to get the same results we saw in the study because it's not progressive. It's not getting harder every week. So as long as you're doing good strength training program – and as long as your conditioning work is progressive, so it gets harder each time, it may not matter that much what type you choose. At that point, the only thing that matters is what do you like to do? Do the stuff that you like, the stuff that you'll continue to do so that you're not part of the 80% of dropouts. So that's kind of the take-home message from there. But you know, we've got studies like this coming up. So people listening in, if you ever want to be part of these studies – it's awesome. It's the pH study, we gave you free green supplements. In the TRX study, if you got in the TRX group, we actually gave you a free TRX suspension trainer, which is like worth $150. So it's super cool. So people can come check out some of these informal experiments that we're doing. We're doing another one on back fitness. So we're actually looking at some markers. We're working with Stu McGill on this one. Some markers of back fitness and endurance, and relating them to back pain. So that's another cool one that we've got coming up. So lots of cool stuff going on with the research aspect of it. And this is cool because people can actually come and participate in these experiments. So they can be the guinea pig, which I don't know how most people feel about it, but for me, I think that's wicked. I would have jumped at this chance, and I can't necessarily be a subject in the studies that I design because then I'm not blinded, you know. But I think it'd be a lot of fun for a lot of the people listening in to come participate.
So if people are interested in that, and then basically all they got to do is go and sign up for your newsletter at precisionnutrition.com.
Yeah, that's all they have to do. Sign up for the newsletter. If they come to our blog, there's a whole little section on it's called informal experiments, and they can see what we've done and what's coming up. And then what we do is we just put out a call for participants. So we put our email address up that they need to contact. You know, we send them a newsletter and say, hey, we're recruiting, and then people can participate that way.
Very cool. I think everyone should really keep an eye out on that. That's really interesting that you're able to just have such a almost the perfect pool of subjects for these studies. It's going to be interesting to see what you do down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got about 50 studies planned. Nutrition ones, supplement ones, exercise ones. So it's just a matter of just, you know, patiently doing one after the next, just like happens in the research lab. And, I don't know. It's a lot of fun for everyone involved, and it's completely different from the academic side because we don't have any problem recruiting anxious and motivated subjects. So that's a cool part.
Well, let's jump into some of the questions that we have from the listeners. I know we got a flurry of emails into the mailbag when we announced that you were coming back on the show. One of the first ones I want to start out with is from Signet. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. That's where he's from. It's from Tom, and it's about G-Flux. So he asks, the principles of energy balance are very intriguing to me right now. I'm struggling severely with a plateau, and I don't know which way to go. I'm hurting for answers. I'm 40 years old, 198 pounds, stuck in the low double digits of body fat, and I want to bust through down to 7 and 9 and just maintain. I'd like to stay in the 190s weight range as it's a good size for me. I've been eating super clean for a long, long time and working my butt off every week on a lot of heavy lifting and metabolic work. Calories have been about 2,500 for a very long time, mostly proteins, fats, fruits and veggies. And in the end, he just wants to say that, you know, he's been working out a lot. He feels like he's been eating the right way. And his question is, are the secrets of G-Flux what I'm missing here?
Mm-hmm. So really, I mean, the way that I kind of summarized this guy's question was he's about 198 pounds at about 12% body fat, which is good. You know, I mean, it's definitely better than average. But I see this all the time. People who are kind of, you know, busting their butts, and they're kind of stuck in that ab-less body fat percentage range, right? Because mm-hmm. I think that's what we're really talking about here. It doesn't matter if he's 12 or 14%. I think people get way too wrapped up in the numbers here. But what he's probably telling me, and I'm just making this assumption, is I'm 40, I'm 198, I'm close to being able to see my abs, but I can't. I really want to see my abs, and I think that 7 to 9% body fat will display them. But I don't know what more to do to make them visible. That's what I think he's saying. And, you know, without talking to Tom, I don't really know, but that's an assumption I'm going to make because I've talked with thousands of people, and this seems to be the same story. And he's talking about being at 2,500 calories for a very long time and not losing. Now, I mean, let's go really, really simple. Now, if Tom was on the call here and we could talk to him, and I would ask him, what's next? I mean, what do we know about losing weight that would help impel your progress forward? And most people, you know, if I phrased it in a couple different ways so they got the question, would come up with the fact that, well, I either need to exercise more or I need to eat less. See, Tom's making the assumption here that for some reason 2,500 calories is the rock bottom. He shouldn't go any lower for whatever reason. Maybe he did a metabolic rate calculation and it showed that 25 was his basal metabolic rate. Whatever. But he's making an assumption that if he goes lower than 2,500 calories, something bad's going to happen. So he's just going to increase his exercise and try and continue to lose that way. And I'm not sure if that's the right assumption. I mean, to get down to the point of seeing your abs, for some people, especially if you've never been to that point, you may have to crash it down for a short period of time, meaning do a lot of exercise and eat very little food. I mean, I can even give testimony to that fact. When I was competing in bodybuilding and I'd get, you know, much lower than just being able to see your abs. I mean, I was aiming for being able to see my pancreas produce insulin. That was my goal. And what was happening there was I would actually get down to about 1,200 or 1,000 calories of consumption some days. Now, I know there's people shrieking on their end of the computer right now, probably, going, oh, that must be too low. I mean, I started out as a 230-pound competitive bodybuilder in my off season. I was getting down to about 195, 198 pounds, ripped. So 1,000 calories sounds pretty low. It sounds pretty dangerous if you listen to some experts. But the truth was I wasn't eating that chronically. I would just go to that level to get down to the amount of leanness that I needed to step on stage and win for a short period of time. Sometimes we simply have to realize that a bigger calorie deficit is what we need if we're at a plateau. Now, I'm not sure if that's the case for Tom because I don't know how he's training. He's saying he's working his butt off. But and the one comment, though, that's really telling that people might have glossed over – because I don't think you actually read it, Kev, but he says, my kids haven't seen me for weeks without a barbell on my back. That's funny. But it's the most telling statement in the thing because it actually tells me, and I might be wrong, that he's working out at home by himself. Okay?
Yeah.
And what that tells me is that he probably doesn't have a training. And again, I'm making all these assumptions, but let's just go with it. That he's working out alone without a training partner. I just wonder if Tom got a training partner who worked out really, really hard, one who was just a little bit better than Tom, if he wouldn't have to change anything, he would just start seeing the fat loss. Because people's definition of busting their A double dollar sign.
Yeah, that was. I think that was both on our ends. We were trying to censor ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. That's very relative. And, you know, I'm not accusing Tom of not working hard because I know this all too well. I used to be a high-level competitive athlete. And in the last few years, I simply haven't trained as hard as I used to. And I go to the gym and I work pretty hard. And some days I really feel like I'm busting my butt. But the truth is, if I were to get my old self as a training partner now, that guy would laugh at my efforts nowadays. He would say, you just don't work out hard enough, you don't work out long enough, and you don't have enough drive to get into the kind of shape you need to be in. And you know what my response would be? You're right, because I don't care anymore, because I would want to be healthy and fit, but I'm not trying to win a bodybuilding championship anymore. And because of that, I don't have that drive to puke at the end of every workout anymore. I don't want to do that, quite frankly. I don't want to be so sore every single day that I can't walk up the steps, or that when I go to sit down on the toilet, I'm groaning in pain, not because of what's about to happen, but because of how I trained my leg, you know? That's how I lived, and that's what it took to be super ripped and muscular. And it's not worth it to me anymore. So, you know, sometimes, you know, I hate to put it in these terms, because what Tom wants is a diet trick, a G-Flux secret that will help him get into the shape of his life without really changing a whole lot more. And it doesn't make Tom lazy. What it does mean, though, is that maybe Tom isn't working as hard as he thinks he is. Maybe Tom doesn't realize that the extremes that you might have to get to 7% body fat are not what he wants to do. You know, and I see the same thing happen with weight gain all the time. people are like, oh, I'm eating, and I'm not gaining any weight. I want to build muscle, blah, blah, blah. If they knew the extreme that they had to eat to build that kind of muscle, they might decide it's not worth it. And I would not judge them for that. Sometimes it isn't worth it. It simply isn't worth eating, you know, 12 times a day. When you eat that much food, you're not digesting it all at, you know, a normal human rate. So you've got a lot of gas and you're going to the bathroom 5 times a day. For some people, it's just not worth it. So, if I were working with Tom one-on-one, we'd have that conversation first. Tom, are you willing to join a gym? Are you willing to get a training partner who will grind your nose into the ground to make you work so hard that you'll get down to 7% body fat? If you are, let's go for it. Here's a couple of strategies. If you're not, I don't judge you. Okay, you're 40, you've got kids, you probably have a career. Maybe it's not worth it to you to train that hard. And if not, that's cool. Keep plugging away. In a couple of years, you're going to maintain 198, 12% body fat. When you turn 55 and you're not 198 and 12% body fat, you're going to be pretty damn happy with that outcome, because everyone else is going to be 200 pounds and 30% body fat. So I know it's not the perfect answer that Tom wants here, but sometimes it's just we just need to have a candid conversation about what you're willing to do. And if Tom is willing to go the extra steps, what I would say is, for starters, let's do a training audit. Let's see if you can't work out any harder. Let's see what your strength training program looks like. Is it actually building muscle or not, or is it just burning calories? Let's see what your interval training program looks like. Are you doing any steady state cardio? Because I'd probably add that if you want to get leaner. Not only probably, I would absolutely add that. I'd probably add in a morning walk 4 or 5 times a week for 30 minutes before you get your day going. And the calories. I don't know what these 2,500 calories look like. Maybe they could be better. Maybe they just need to be a bit lower for the time being until he gets that lean. So those are just some thoughts. I mean, you know, without seeing Tom and without working with him and knowing everything, that's my first level of thought. But again, it goes sometimes beyond just what he should eat and how he should exercise. There's a big question of, are you willing to do what it takes? And if you're not, it's okay. Because it can be pretty damn hard and pretty one-dimensional to get down to 7% body fat. And maybe not everyone wants to be that one-dimensional. Maybe they love their family and their job enough to not focus just on training and eating with 90% of their brain energy. So that's my answer there.
Well, I know you just answered Tom's question, but I think you might have just answered a lot of listeners' questions when it comes to just plateauing in terms of their fat loss.
Yep. It takes – I mean, plateaus happen for a good reason. It's not because your program isn't good necessarily. It's because your body simply is telling you, hey, for this amount of effort you're putting in, I'm not going to change anymore. That's what it's saying. And what it's asking for is, if you want to change more, you're going to have to put in a hell of a lot more effort. And again, like I said, I mean, I'm at the point in my life personally – where I don't want to put any more effort. I used to carry maybe 15 pounds more muscle mass than I do now, and I used to be 3 or 4% body fat lower than I am now. And I'll admit, when I look in the mirror and I compare to old pictures, I say, man, I should get back to that. But the truth is, I run a couple of businesses now. I've got, you know, a whole bunch of other responsibilities in my life that preclude that. And I'm okay making that decision. It's an informed decision and it's an intelligent one. If I were to, like, you know, sell my house and go move into a van outside of Gold's Gym in Venice Beach, just so I could lose 3% more body fat and gain 10 pounds more muscle, then I'd consider my life kind of a failure. So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah. The funny thing is I actually met one of those guys that lives in a van outside of Gold's Gym when I was training there.
Yeah, I know that. I knew you'd been out there and you lived out there and you trained there, so I didn't know if you had any stories on that, but that was why I made that analogy.
No, yeah, it's real. you know, I think a lot of people, like, our next person with the next question likes to get something for nothing. And this is from Sarah, who wants to know, where do you fall in the sweetener debate, Splenda versus Stevia? Which one should I be using as an alternative to sugar?
Well, again, like I like to read behind the words. I mean, the question is, and people want this answer. Berardi said blah, blah, blah is better than the other. So that's what I'm going to use from now on.
Yes,
and that's kind of how people want me to answer the question. But I'm going to go behind the question. I'm going to say, why are we making the assumption that you need to use any of these three? Like these words, alternative to sugar, imply that you need to replace sugar in your diet with something else. My question is, why? Do you need an alternative to sugar? I almost think that alternative to sugar was just a great marketing phrase that was developed by sweetener companies. So they're like, hey, instead of this being some other sweet stuff you don't need, because that doesn't sell a lot of Splenda or Equal or NutraSweet or whatever was popular at the time, let's call it an alternative to sugar. So, you know, and I don't mean to pick on Sarah here at all. You know, I mean, this is a real common question, and it's actually a good one because you want to know. But my question is, do you actually need any of this stuff? Do you need to sweeten your food with sugar or Splenda or Stevia? My answer is probably no. You probably don't. What would I prefer for health? Health reasons? I'd prefer you use as little as all three of these as possible. That's my preference. Now, if you press me and say, but okay, what about that occasional time that I'm going to bake something? All right, cool. I can answer that. A little bit of Splenda or a little bit of Stevia or a little bit of sugar. And when I say sugar, you could also replace that with honey or agave or some other natural form of sugar. Isn't a problem. If you're doing an occasional baking, and you're going to use any one of these three, that's fine too. Now, people will next go to, but what's the research say? Like, I have a sweet tooth, man. I'm not going to give it up. What do I use to satisfy that sweet tooth? And, you know, my response then is, I think if you eat a lot of Splenda, that's not good. If you eat a lot of Stevia, that's not good. If you eat a lot of sugar, that's not good. Or any of the other variants of sweeteners or alternatives. So my preference here is moderation. Okay, a little Splenda, no problem. A little Stevia, no problem. A little sugar, no problem. So the way that I treat it, very personally, and my health is of utmost importance to myself, is to use very little of all of them. And if I do ever use sweeteners, to make sure that it's a small amount and I don't use them every single day or regularly. Now, I use protein powders. And many people will say, well, most protein powders are sweetened. That's true. And they usually have some combination of sweeteners. What I do is I actually have natural unflavored, unsweetened protein powders, some vegan ones, some regular whey and stuff like that. And whenever I have a protein shake, I just cut it half with unsweetened and half with flavored. So, you know, I use BioTest Metabolic Drive. I use Muscle Milk sometimes. I use a host of different varieties. But I always use a shake that's cut with half flavored and half unflavored. Simply put, because I drink enough protein shakes with other stuff in them to know that the unflavored stuff on its own just doesn't taste very good to me. So I'll use a little bit of this other stuff. But besides that, you know, nowadays I don't use a lot of sweeteners. Now, people who own Gourmet Nutrition will know that some of the recipes include Splenda, some of them Stevia, some of them sugar. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, Gourmet Nutrition is a healthy recipe book that I've published. So we use some of them throughout. So I'm not saying we never use them or never say you can use them. But it's just about moderation. It's using as little of these sugars and alternative to sugars as possible. Because I just don't think, you know, loading your body with a lot of sugar is good, or loading your body with a lot of chemical that resembles sugar is good either. So I don't know if that's a good answer for Sarah or not, but that's how I treat it. And, you know, eventually the ideal, and this is even for myself, is to get to the point where I don't use much of this stuff or maybe even any of it. But I don't think any is a great solution either, because when you restrict something from your diet completely, it can cause some serious like rebound cravings and problems. So, you know, it's just about using very little and using moderation in this case.
Well, we're going to try to hit two more questions. Unfortunately, it's my fault that we're going to have to cut the interview short in about 10 minutes. It's not JB's fault, so you can send those hate emails to me later today after you finish listening to this if we don't get your question. Let's go to one question that we have from Nick. I noticed the issue of carb cycling has popped up on the precision nutrition boards lately. What are your thoughts on this approach in general? Also, how it compares to a ketogenic diet?
I think carb cycling is a really, really great strategy for people who are ready for it. What I mean by that is it's more advanced. Carb cycling basically means that every single day you're going to have a different type of diet approach than yesterday, and that you're going to have to count things, and that you're going to have to be like hyper aware of your intake of certain nutrients. So you're going to have to know where the carbs are coming from and how many you're getting and which days they need to be high and which days they need to be low. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying you got to be ready for it. And a lot of people simply aren't ready for it. They're like what we talked about earlier. There's just a level that some people are willing to go. And if you're not willing to go there, just say that you're not willing to go there. And it's okay. It's totally not a big deal. As long as you also recognize that you're going to get to a certain point and then not a lot further. So with carb cycling, I love the approach. It's really, really effective when people get to sticking points where they are training properly. Not that they think they are, but they actually are. And where they are eating very, very well. And they either get to they're dieting down, so they're trying to lose fat, and they get to a stagnant point where they might have a low carb day, a moderate carb day, and a high carb day. So that's certainly a one effective way of doing it. But it also works for muscle building too, where if you're just always hypercaloric, so eating more calories than your body needs, and a high carb diet, you can get to a point where your body just simply starts packing on fat way too quickly. In which case, carb cycling is really, really helpful, because fundamentally, carb cycling works at a couple different levels. It helps to cycle your calories as well, because you have to keep in mind when you're dropping your carbs on a low carb day, you're probably not replacing them with other nutrients. So you're fundamentally also calorie cycling at the same time. The other thing is it works on the level of the liver. And the liver is sort of like our master hormonal regulator for carbohydrates. And that interacts a lot with body fat. So when your liver is full of carbohydrates versus when it's empty of carbohydrates, it does different things. So that's why carb cycling tends to work, because it has a really good physiological basis, and it also helps to cycle our calories. So I really like the approach. As far as how it compares to ketogenic diet, it really doesn't compare. I mean, a ketogenic diet means very, very low carbs for a long period of time. So I'm assuming that Nick is just asking this question. I want to lose fat. Should I carb cycle or do a ketogenic diet? And I can't answer that question without knowing Nick and his body type specifically. In precision nutrition, we talk about body type nutrition. Certain body types handle carbs differently. So I need to know what type Nick is. I need to know what he's doing currently. And then we can determine whether he should carb cycle or do a ketogenic diet. If I were to just answer the question outright without knowing anything more, I might say, Nick, okay, you want to lose fat. For the first few weeks, here's what we're going to do. We're going to drop out carbs. Okay, so maybe we do 2 weeks of a relative ketogenic diet. High protein, high fats, low in carbohydrate. After that 2 weeks is up, we're going to start carb cycling. Because during that first 2 weeks, we can probably drop – we're going to deplete carbohydrates to the body, and we'll probably drop a good amount of body fat. At that point, we want to make sure we don't get into starvation mode, so we're going to cycle our carbs. So that's kind of a quick answer. It might not be the right answer for Nick, but it's how I'd approach it if I didn't know anything more.
The last question we'll get to comes from another John from Calgary, Alberta. And he says, "Hi, Kevin. Could you ask John to speak about his vegetarian experiment? Also, could you ask John for his ideas on the best way to cook beans to reduce the amount of, quote, gas produced during digestion? Thanks."
It's a happy question. The vegetarian experiment went really well. I mean, for those of you who didn't follow it, I have a three-part article series on the Precision Nutrition website about what I was trying to do. And it basically was all motivated from a conversation I had at the gym. A good buddy of mine brought a new kid to the gym, and he introduced me and he said, "Here's my buddy." And he's a vegetarian, so I'm trying to help him train to build some muscle. And so the guy kind of shyly, you know, he's like, "Hey," because he's actually read Precision Nutrition site and our articles and stuff. And he said, "Well, you know, is there anything you can recommend to help me build muscle? I'm a vegan. I don't eat any animal products at all." And unfortunately, on that particular day, a good buddy of mine was there who tends to be known for not being politically correct. And he's a guy from New Jersey. You know, I've known him for a really long time. He's a confirmed meat eater. And his response was, "What can I do to build muscle as a vegan?" Was eat meat. and then he proceeded to rip on the guy for the next hour. So the interesting thing was, when I walked away from that, you know, and I participated in the healthy ribbing of him too. But when I walk away from things, I tend to be reflective. So I thought, you know, is it true though? Is it true that if you know what the heck you're doing and you're training properly, can you build muscle while eating a vegan diet? And I talked to some friends about it, and many of them just had the assumption that no, you couldn't. I mean, it's just there's no meat, there's no muscle, right? So I decided to do an experiment. So I wanted to follow a strict vegan diet for 4 weeks while training hard, and I wanted to overeat, so eat an excess amount of calories, and see if I just get fat or if I gain lean mass. And so that's what I did. I put together a really sound vegan diet plan, although it wasn't strict vegan. I really like eggs, I got to admit. So I had 3 eggs in the morning, but that was pretty much all of the animal stuff that I had all day long. I used good vegan protein supplements. And at the end of the experiment, I gained about five or six pounds of lean mass and only about 2 pounds of fat, according to my calipers. So it was in all, you know, senses of physique progress, a success. 4 weeks, gained about 5 pounds of lean mass. Fantastic, you know, so it's totally possible. The only problem was I was really uncomfortable. The high amount of grains and legumes and stuff like that was giving me some serious problems with digestion. And to illustrate this in a very visual way, when I would wake up in the morning, my waist would be 32 inches around, okay, which is my standard waist diameter or girth. At the end of the day, my waist was 42 inches.
Wow.
So I would gain 10 inches on my waist during the day, and I would be so bloated, it was ridiculous. It was uncomfortable, obviously, right? Like when you put your pants on at the beginning of the day and they fit great, at the end of the day, you got to open up the buttons. It's not a good thing. And somehow that air, that gas needs to be released. And I feel real bad for everyone who's around me during that 4 week period, because it was almost like a gas leak in your house that just kept leaking. You know? The problem was that just simply these undigestible starches and fibers. I was eating a lot of fiber, and also things called lectins. Lectins are these molecules that exist in legumes and some grains that if you're intolerant to them, it can be worse than lactose intolerance. And as you can see, I was intolerant to them. So it was some of these undigestible starches and these lectins that were causing the problem. So that kind of motivates John's question, which is, how do you reduce the amount of gas? Well, I never really figured it out, John, for myself anyway. Although it's kind of a joke, because I was eating a hypercaloric diet, which means I was overeating. The bottom line is, I think a strict vegan diet can work really well for fat loss and for maintenance. But when you're trying to pack on lean mass, I just don't think there's any way to reduce the gas, because you're simply eating way too much food. And mm-hmm. Ryan Andrews, who's our director of education for Precision Nutrition, is a vegan, and you know, he feels awesome on it. He's never felt better in his life, and he's eaten this way for several years now. But we had this chat, and he agreed. I mean, he's like, you know, I don't know if I would ever try and bulk up on a vegan diet because you're going to have that problem almost any time. Now, I mean, there are strategies I tried to cook the beans. I mean, one way I actually learned this from John Williams, Dr. John Williams, who helped me with the first gourmet nutrition, and that was to soak the beans with baking soda overnight. So you take the uncooked beans and you put them in a big pot of water overnight, and you soak them with some baking soda, a real small amount, maybe half a teaspoon. We've got the formula in the book. It's basically a certain amount of baking soda per amount of water that you use with the beans. And that helps to reduce some of the anti-nutrients and some of the lectins. It pulls them right out, and when you drain the beans in the morning to cook them the next day, a lot of the anti-nutrients are gone. It wasn't completely effective for me, but it's been shown to work, and so it does. And so if you're going to eat a normal calorie vegan or vegetarian diet, this would be a great strategy to use.
Wow, that sounds like quite a pain in the butt, huh? Sorry.
Yes, no, good.
Yeah, not my best attempt at humor. John, I think we're going to have to wrap things up here. And again, I apologize to some of the questions we did not get to. But let's just finish off. What should people keep a lookout for at your website, precisionnutrition.com? And, what other upcoming projects do you have besides the lean eating coaching program that you have going on?
Yeah, I mean, when people get off listening to this, I'd love to have them pop over to the site and come just look at some of the cool things that we're doing if they're not familiar with what we're doing. If they come to our blog, the last couple of blog posts actually cover some really cool stuff with respect to the Lean Eating Coaching Program. At least, some cool ideas on your lifestyle and how it impacts your ability to change your body. So we've got one post called Get Lean, Win $20,000, and that talks about incentives and how powerful they are for changing your body. I could go on and on about this. We could do a whole call on incentives and the evidence for how that works. We've got another one called Blackmail Yourself Lean, which is actually a really cool one that talks about the stick. If the $20,000 is the carrot, this is the stick. There's one that I think people would really be fascinated by called The Key to Accidental Fitness, which talks about how important your community is in changing your body. And, I always find that at first people kind of ho-hum this type of stuff because they really believe that it just has to do with the food that they're eating. But I can't emphasize – I mean, this is why me, a nutritional biochemist, spends a lot of my time looking at this, because it's not just about the food you're eating. So I'd love to see people come and watch these videos that we have and read some of these blog posts that we have. I'd also love to see them come check out our informal experiments program, and love to have people participate in that. And then beyond that, in the next little while, we've got some other really exciting things. So if people join our newsletter list, they'll see what's coming up. Things like genetic testing and genetic profiling, which is something we won't have time to get into today, but is going to be awesome. We're basically going to be able to tell people what to eat based on their genetic profile, and some other stuff that I actually call abnormal physiology. I call normal physiology what we do almost every single day, where someone comes to us and is relatively healthy, and we teach them how to eat and exercise, and that works for about 85% to 90% of the people that come to see us. Lean eating coaching, we could go a little bit further than that, but if someone just comes and reads our articles and gets the precision nutrition system, 85% to 90% of them, if they do what we say, we'll get the result that they're after. What about the other 10% to 15%? Well, when we start looking at them, we notice what I call abnormal physiology. It might be a problem with gastrointestinal health. It might be a problem with cortisol levels or blood sugar regulation. There's 5 or 6 areas that we look at that I call abnormal physiology, where the body's not working 100% like it should. And because of that, you have a hell of a time changing your body. And very, very few people that I ever meet are at this point, the abnormal physiology point. But when we discover it, there's some really, really interesting things that we can do with nutrition and supplements and IV infusions and all kinds of cool stuff to help them fix their physiology, to right what's kind of wrong, and then get them to that point where they can do the precision nutrition stuff and fall into that 85 to 90% category. So that's some stuff people should be looking for, because we're going to be doing a whole profile of blood testing and genomic profiling, the whole deal in the future. So that's something that people, I think, will find very, very interesting, especially if they are the type of person who's been plugging away and doing everything right for a long time and, you know, doing three times as much work as everyone else but getting half the results. Maybe they're in that abnormal physiology realm, and we'll have some stuff to help them as well, so people can look for that. So for now, it's lean eating coaching and checking out our informal experiments. For later on, we can talk about some of these other cool things, and maybe we'll do another call when we've got those ready, Kev.
No, I think that would be great. And if people haven't already, just bookmark the Precision Nutrition website and especially the blog, because you guys – it's not like a once-a-week thing you do on the blog. You guys pretty much update it every single day. So people should be checking that out pretty much daily.
Yeah, we've got a new thing every day, usually falling into one of a couple different categories. Informal experiments, we do research reviews, expert and athlete profiles. So we talk about people who are using our program and other experts, and recipes, the whole deal. So we've got a lot of cool stuff happening on the blog. So, yeah, I'd love people to check it out.
Very cool. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us here. Again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and especially JB. I want to thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kev. I really appreciate you having me back. It's always fun talking with you and answering some of your listener questions. And I look forward to coming back next time you'll have me.
Absolutely. Thanks again. Again, that is going to wrap it up for us here, folks. Please don't forget to check out thefitcast.com. Check us out on iTunes. And if you have a question for our guest next week, Dan John, please send it to questions@thefitcast.com. Or you can go to thefitcast.com and contact us through there as well. So everyone, I hope you have a great Memorial Day weekend if you're in the States. And if you're not, you should have a great week either way.